call to order the committee, House Committee on Human Services, today, February 27th, 2009, and I open up the public hearing on 2506.
House Bill 2506 requires health benefit plans to include coverage for licensed professional counselors and licensed family therapists acting within their scope of practice. It prohibits the practice of professional counseling or marriage and family therapy and the use of those terms by unlicensed individuals. It exempts certified alcohol and drug counselors who are practicing within their defined scope of practice.
Thank you very much. And I just want to remind folks, please take out your cell phones and your Blackberries and your Blueberries and your Raspberries and make sure that they are all turned off, not just on mute, but turned off because it affects the sound system. Thank you very much. Representative Kotek is turning hers off.
You should say, and we will find
Representative Kotek, are you presenting this morning? Great. Thank you.
Great. It's actually a much better bill.
My phone is off, Madam Chair. Good morning, everyone. For the record, I'm Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. And it's nice to be before you this morning. I miss serving on this committee, so.
We miss you.
Although, with many bills coming forward, you'll be seeing me a lot more than this will probably be the first of many visits. So it's nice to see you this morning. It's my pleasure to speak on behalf of House Bill 2506. There are several members on this bill, including the good chair. And, you know, in my short time in the legislature, we had this bill, a similar version, actually probably a less expanded version of this bill, before us in House in 2007. And then we revisited the issue back in February of 08. And I think it's a good bill, and I'm really pleased to see it back, so that's why I'm here this morning. If many of you may recall, in previous, I think it was a year ago or maybe even a little longer, there was a series of Oregonian articles reporting on unlicensed therapists and counselors having inappropriate relations with their clients. And a real concern about public safety in this area of mental health services, and the Oregon Coalition on Consumer Mental Health and Protection brought a bill in 2008 that protected consumers by protecting the title of professional counselors and marriage and family therapists. It passed quickly out of committee last year and had the distinction of being the first bill passed out of the House in the special session in February. However well-intended, it had the unintended consequences of limiting the use of the generic words therapist and counselor to other legitimate professions. That was not the intent of the coalition. As the bill was amended in the Senate, it removed the strong consumer protection component that was the focus of the bill. And it ultimately was the last bill of the February session. Those of us who were there remember that debate. It lost by one vote on the House floor, and that was it, and we all went home. So the interim happened. The proponents worked diligently together with other stakeholders who had raised concerns in the February session. They worked in the interim, having extensive discussions with the Oregon Psychologists Association and with alternative providers. And in true collaborative fashion, they have reached consensus on every point in this bill. It is now a true practice act, which was a bone of contention last time, and it protects both the public and legitimate licensed professional counselors and licensed marriage and family therapists. Of the six qualified mental health providers, only licensed marriage and family therapists and licensed professional counselors are not mandated by the state to be covered in group health plans. This bill, as did the one in 2008 and 2007, provides that if group health benefit plans cover licensed clinical social workers and nurse practitioners, that would then they would also be required to cover the LPCs and the LMFTs. There was no opposition to this provision in 2008. I cannot say enough about the folks who are working together to make this bill the best possible bill. And I think, I'm hoping that this session is when we finally get this legislation passed on both sides and return or establish some equity across the mental health professionals, as well as protecting the public in terms of making sure their safety is guaranteed. So I would ask you to do what you can to listen to the folks who worked hard in the interim to bring this bill, all the extra details. My understanding is there are some amendments, though not maybe ready for prime time, that will put the final touches on the bill. And I know the chair, who does a great job of making sure everything is right before you pass it, it'll be a good bill. So I urge your support, and I think you'll know that this is a good bill when you've had your final decision. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Kotek. Any questions of Representative Kotek? Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Bill to us. So we have a list of people to speak: Larry Connors, Brian Nilsson, and Jeff Harmon. And please introduce yourself and just start speaking.
Good morning. My name is Larry Connor. I'm a licensed professional counselor from Portland. I'm appearing on behalf of the Oregon Coalition for Consumer Mental Health Protection and Choice. I want to thank you for allowing us to appear today before you, and I wish to thank you for your help and your support for our prior legislative efforts and for our current House Bill 2506. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, you have a copy of House Bill 2506 that unfortunately does not have quite the right wording we wish it to have. So I would like to go through the amendments we are proposing section by section.
And we don't have these amendments, just colleagues, but they're in the process of being written.
Section 2, we have added the word group to health benefits plans so that self-insured programs are exempt from the requirements to reimburse services provided by licensed professional counselors and licensed marriage and family therapists. Section 4, we have updated the practice definitions of professional counseling and marriage and family therapy to meet current national standards of practice and education. Both definitions are based on those created by our national organizations, the American Counseling Association and the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. This section was created in collaboration with the Oregon Psychological Association. In addition, the practice definitions are carefully worded to help the legislature have a clear line of demarcation between those providers who are required to be licensed and those providers who do not qualify for licensure, with the hope that, at some time in the near future, the legislature will have the tools to create an oversight board for those providers of counseling or therapy services who do not qualify for licensure under any existing Oregon statute. Section 8. Here we are ensuring that all licensees practice in compliance with national ethical standards of practice concerning diagnosis and treatment of mental disorders. This section was discussed with the Oregon Psychological Association, and they have approved the language. Section 9. As a response to some troubling Oregonian articles that Representative Kotek just referred to that were published several years ago, we have created language in this section so that our board is able to discipline any person who continues to practice after having lost a license because of having engaged in sexual activity with a client. The board will now be able to ensure that such persons will not be able to provide any kind of counseling or therapy services. Section 9 also includes exemptions from the requirements for this bill for any person who is licensed by the state to provide mental health services, any member of the clergy, anyone employed by a state, federal, or private agency, or any alcohol and drug counselor certified in Oregon. This is the part of the bill that applies only to licensed marriage and family therapists and licensed professional counselors. Section 9 also excludes any provider of counseling or therapy services who does not qualify for licensure by education or by practice, meaning that those persons will not be put out of work by the passage of this legislation. This proposed language was created in collaboration with a group of unlicensed providers. Section 13. Here the proposed amendments are updating educational requirements to meet national standards for diagnostic training and clinical supervision for all incoming licensees. We are also ensuring that current licensees meet the same standards. The language of this section was developed in collaboration with the Oregon Psychological Association, and we are grateful for their help with this and all sections of the revisions. Those are the proposed amendments. We respectfully request that you will allow us to continue to work with the Office of Legislative Counsel to ensure that the language of House Bill 2506 will be what we have created in collaboration with all the stakeholders mentioned here. Thank you for your
Great.
Time.
Would you like us to hear the whole panel before we are open to questions?
I think that was the plan.
Okay, great.
Yes, Chair.
Okay,
so, ma'am, thank you.
Sure. Next, please.
Okay, I'm Jeff Harmon. I'm a licensed professional counselor. Been licensed in Oregon to practice counseling since 1991. And my practice is in Joseph, Oregon, which is located in Wallowa County, which is an area that where we have 7,000 people and no traffic lights. And so what I want to talk to you about this morning is some of the concerns that we have for practicing in rural areas and some of the things that maybe are unique to us. The things that I want to cover are accessibility, privacy and confidentiality, and consumer protection. I, until recently, have been the only private practitioner in Wallowa County. All other mental health services have been provided through the Community Mental Health Center. So often I have people who come to see me or who want to come to see me because they are interested in protecting their privacy and their confidentiality. And they come to me because they expect that I can provide the service because I'm licensed. They expect because I have an office that's kind of quiet and separate from things that they're going to be able to have some confidentiality. And they also expect that they're going to be able to use their health insurance to help pay for those services. When they come and I talk with them about that, then I have to disclose to them that I'm often not able to bill their insurance companies. And then I can look, and then I deal with the look on their face, which is one of disappointment. And then what happens is that puts them in a position where they have to begin making choices. Okay, do I want to continue to see you and pay full price? Do I want to go to the county mental health center where you sit in a waiting room and everyone who's in the waiting room is there to get mental health services? You could imagine if you were, for example, a teacher and you're there for whatever your reasons are and you're sitting across the room from a couple of your troubled students that you counsel and work with. For some people, this kind of a situation is just too much to put themselves in. Another choice they make is, well, maybe I won't get service. Or maybe another choice is that, well, we'll come, but we won't come as often as we think that we need to be there, just in order to help contain those costs. When other providers are able to get paid by insurance company, it makes us more unaffordable because they're not able to use the benefits that they have as a result of their jobs to be able to help offset those costs. I want to talk a little bit about accessibility, and that is in Wallowa County there are only two male therapists. One of them is Paul Spriggs Flanders, and he is the clinical director of the Wallowa County Center for Mental Health. Now, he is not does not offer 40 hours a week of outpatient services because he's the clinical director. He's responsible for the oversight of the clinic and to make sure services are provided the way that they're supposed to be. I'm the only other choice. Again, if you have health insurance and for some reason you decide that you think that you would be best served by meeting with a male therapist for whatever reason, that's not going to be an option for you if you have to use your health insurance. So what is your alternative? If you can't get in with Paul and you're not able to see me, then you can drive to LeGrand, which is 67 miles away. Just doesn't make sense. And along that same line of thinking with regard to accessibility, we're pretty fortunate in Wallowa County. We don't have any psychologists, but we do have three licensed clinical social workers, and we have three licensed professional counselors and one candidate for licensure, for professional counseling. But in some Oregon counties, they're the only mental health providers that are available to serve their communities are either licensed professional counselors or licensed marriage and family therapists. There are no licensed clinical social workers or nurse practitioners or psychologists in those areas. So it makes it hard to get services. Then the third thing that I want to talk about is consumer protection. Usually when we talk about consumer protection, we begin to think in terms of making sure that the public is informed and knows that they're going to be able to receive qualified mental health care that has oversight by the state. Consumer protection goes more than that. Sometimes when you put people who need care in the position of having to make a choice about whether they can afford it or whether they can't, that puts people at risk. And I want to give you a specific illustration of that. A couple of years ago, an individual who lived up there became very despondent and suicidal, voluntarily checked himself into a hospital in Lewiston, Idaho, which is 2 hours north of where we live. He didn't check himself into Wallowa Memorial Hospital, and the reason is because he was very concerned about his confidentiality. Upon release, they made a treatment plan, and they encouraged that individual to continue getting outpatient services. So he came to see me, and he thought that Blue Cross, in this case, was going to help cover the costs. I called Blue Cross, and I had to go back and tell him, no, they're not going to cover the costs. He said, if they won't help me with the costs, and I'm not able to see you, then I'm not going to see anybody. So I called Blue Cross back, and I said, this person's at risk, and he needs services. Blue Cross went ahead and made the waiver. Didn't have anything to do with my qualifications. It was just a matter of Blue Cross understood that if this individual was put in that position and chose not to get that care, he might end up back in the hospital or worse. Good outcome. He did come to see me, and he's doing fine. I don't see him anymore, and he's back at work and doing just what he needs to do. But I think that's an illustration of consumer protection, because what if that person, what if Blue Cross wouldn't have made the waiver? Who knows what would have happened? I don't think that we should be putting people at risk because health care is not affordable for them. So what I'm here to say is that I encourage your support of House Bill 2506.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming to Salem today.
Thank you. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, my name is Dr. Brian Nielsen of Eugene, Oregon. I represent the consumer, the Coalition for Consumer Mental Health Protection and Choice. I appreciate the support that this committee has given us for 2 years now. I was part of this effort beginning in 2006 and continue to remain committed to it. Is this mic loud enough?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. My colleagues have made many of the points that pertain to access, consumer protection. Representative Kotek mentioned the issue of the unlicensed provider, or the provider that lost his license that continues to practice, that continued to practice, and how that was highlighted in the Oregonian. In an article on Wednesday, October 24th, this bill takes care of that problem. It does. It has been mentioned that LPCs and LMFTs are two of six licensed mental health professions in Oregon. It is true that we have been fighting for insurance reimbursement equity since 1995. We have been licensed in this state since 1990. So certainly there is a sting to being a licensed professional, but not having the same equity as the other licensed mental health professions in Oregon. But this is more, it is larger than just insurance reimbursement equity. We are committed to consumer protection. In 2007, a group of us sat before Senator Gordley, and she said, when are you guys going to work together? One of the social workers and the psychologists and the nurse practitioners, and when are you going to work together? And I thought, that's a novel idea. I don't see that happening. Well, we learned in the February of 08 session, the charge was issued again by Representative Barnhart and by others. You need to work collaboratively to address concerns that these other professions have. and we have worked collaboratively. The Oregon Psychological Association has been very gracious and very candid in addressing their concerns, one of which was that required coursework for diagnosis and treatment of mental disorders was not included in statute. This bill addresses that, as it addresses other things that strengthen and clarify the scope of practice as defined in statute. And I'm very appreciative of the Oregon Psychological Association. We have actually met with non-licensed providers as well, because every time we have presented a bill, we have been hit with opposition from every conceivable angle. I would suspect that there are members of the Oregon Association for counselors and therapists here. Are there any?
Maybe not.
Okay. These are individuals, many of them with master's degrees, who practice a subspecialty of counseling or therapy. Many of these approaches are mindfulness-based, or Reiki or Hakomi. These other healing arts have value, and many clients find them helpful. It is not our intention to put people out of business in a recession, nor in good times either, because Oregonians value choice. So this HB 2506 has been well crafted as a practice act, but also as a bill that does not put others out of business who provide a type of a psychotherapeutic service. Pardon me. So, in the handouts that this committee has received, I detail the differences between a practice act and a title act. I won't elaborate a lot on that, other than to say that senators requested a practice act, which brings the practice of this profession under the authority of statute accountable to the legislature and to a licensing board. And that is exactly what we've done. This is a practice act in which statute protects title and practice of the profession to those licensed. And I can let you review that. In conclusion, the second page of my handout shows the growth of our profession. It shows the number of licensees beginning in the year 2000, 1,450 approximately. 8 years later, 2,800. That's nearly a doubling. There is a need. There is a national need and a local need. How many in the audience are LPCs or LMFTs? Would you raise your hand? Okay. We are the most one of the most underutilized resources in Oregon because we've been limited by statute. Also in that handout, you'll see references to a bill that was signed in by President Bush in 2006, endorsing, recommending that the VA vigorously push ahead and utilize the resources of LPCs and LMFTs. You will see a copy of a letter that was recently signed by 10 members of Congress addressing the Secretary of the Veterans Administration, urging move forward on this. And I will let you examine that letter for yourself. In conclusion, I promise, my
colleague, Jeff Harmon from Joseph. Part of the written testimony that he submitted included this map. I believe you have it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everything that is in red, lime green, I wanted forest green, or yellow, has been defined as a health, as a HPSA, which is a health shortage area for mental health providers in Oregon. By rough estimation, well, about four-fifths of the state needs more mental health providers. And pages 3 and 4 of this handout detail county by county. And the shortages are defined by the U.S. government Department of Health and Human Services. So if I had more, there's no need to further elaborate. But these statistics are well documented, and I can certainly provide other documentation. What Jeff did not mention was the actual numbers of LPCs and LMFTs in these counties. There's close to 550 LPCs and LMFTs in Baker, Umatilla, Deschutes, Klamath, Clatsop, Tillamook, Yamhill, Malheur. I've never known how to say
Malheur.
That.
Malheur.
Malheur. Thank you. House Bill 2506 makes these licensed mental health providers accessible to individuals that need treatment. We appreciate your support and your long-suffering with this bill. We urge that you allow us to work with the other groups to just finalize some language for the sake of clarity. And I thank you for the opportunity of submitting this testimony.
Thank you very much. Any questions of anyone on the panel? Representative Boone.
And I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Oh, I'm Brian Nilsen, Dr. Nilsen. And Brian's fine, Representative Boone.
The man to your left.
Larry Connor.
Oh,
Larry.
This man.
Yes. I think he was the one who said this. Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned that you are going to amend it to have groups only, so I'm wondering why not individual coverage, because a lot of people may not be in a health insurance group.
I'm not sure I can answer that question completely, except that individual policies, as far as I know in the state of Oregon, rarely, if ever, cover any mental health services. That's the best.
You can ask that question maybe of okay. Someone else who's speaking. Yeah.
That's the best I can answer for you there.
And follow-up? So you had to designate that it would be group only. Is that what you're, why this?
Yeah. Representative Boone, the agreement we had last session was to apply only to group policies, and it was an oversight for us to include the self-insured. So that's
okay.
The reason
thank
for the change.
You. Any further questions?
I don't believe the state can regulate self-insured.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think we didn't require that when we passed.
Well, we can't. That's federal purview is self-insured. But it's really my comment is I hope that we don't go through the consumer protection strip out fiasco that we had last time. And I clearly support what we're doing.
Great.
And I'm interested to see the amendment.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative.
Okay. Now we have Lori Queen, Lisa Blair, and John Powell. Did you want to speak? Wherever John is, I guess he's not here. Okay.
He's outside.
He said he may not. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. My name is Lori Queen. I'm a psychologist. I'm the president of the Oregon Psychological Association. I know that various versions of this bill have indeed come forth many, many times over the past years. OPA has historically always opposed these bills. That has been, it's been claimed it's been on turf issues, and I would like to strongly refute that. The opposition has always come from the fact that the bills have come forward as vendorship or reimbursement issues only. As they mentioned in this last go-round when they brought it forth again, it was only for third-party reimbursement. The problems that we had is that the LPCs and LMFTs had never had an actual practice act, which defines their practice, their scope of practice, and that clarifies their minimum levels of training and experience. So they did come to us this past go-round. We have worked very closely together with them. We've met several times. They've given us drafts. We've read through them. We've responded. They have responded with corrections. They'll send back their corrections and say, okay, what do you think of this? Is this what you're going for? We would say, well, not quite exactly. We're still concerned about this. This process has gone all the way up until even last week. Then it was a matter of, well, we need to more clearly define what you regard, you know, or what you're meaning in regards to assessment. They have been very attentive to that level of detail. We have greatly appreciated that because if they are going for third-party reimbursements, which is essentially just simply being able to bill insurance, that's not so much a matter of turf, or it's not at all a matter of turf. It's a matter of, it means that they are looking to do services that are of a medical necessity quality. I think it's pretty important that they have made very clear that they have the standards of training and experience that would cover their ability to treat mental and emotional disorders of a medical necessity nature. Their practice act or their license has not required that they have training in mental and emotional diagnosis and treatment. Now, granted, most of the programs do indeed have that, and that was the argument that they would say, well, but here's my program, I've done this. That's great, but it wasn't standardized in their actual license. This bill does that, and I greatly appreciate and respect the efforts that they have made to make sure that areas of diagnosis and treatment, training, supervision, all of the areas of experience as well as the exclusions of practice that don't meet that, and they are also covering, they've been willing to cover current licensees to make sure that current licensees, not just those coming forth, but the current licensees are also going to be meeting those standards through attestations of their own training and experience. I do support this. I do understand that there's still some language left. As I say, this was going down up until even last week, but I support their efforts greatly. I respect and admire their focus on their profession. Counseling has been sort of a catch-all term, and I do believe that citizens of Oregon really do need more mental health services, more accessibility, but they also need it of a level that will be appropriate and professional, and I believe that this group is addressing that very appropriately. I respect it. I support it, assuming that, of course, the final details of the language do come through, which I have every reason to believe will be great.
So. Good. Thank you very much. Any questions of this witness? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And thank you for working on this. So Lisa Blair is not here?
I'm sorry, that was an error on my part.
Okay, got it. Anna Bernardi and Elizabeth Kushwa. And is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this? Don't feel you have to.
Yeah, we've been listening to a lot of them.
Is there a message?
Go ahead.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, good morning. Thank you for hearing our testimony on House Bill 2506. I'm just here to introduce Anna Berardi, who's a professor at George Fox University, and to let you know that if you have any questions at all after this hearing, I would be more than happy to get back to you with any information you require.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Chair Tomei and members of the committee. Yes, my name is Anna Berardi. I'm from George Fox University, and I reside in Tigard, Oregon, where I also have a private practice. Thank you to each and every one of you for your past and your current work on this bill. We know you've been working hard here for us and for Oregonians. I would like to present as testimony letters in support of House Bill 2506 from Counseling and Marriage and Family Therapy graduate faculty from universities across the state of Oregon. You will notice that many of these letters are signed by their entire faculty, which is a huge feat to get us all together to agree on wording and to sign. So, these letters specifically attest that each of these graduate programs instructs students in the assessment, diagnosis, and treatment of mental disorders and require these graduates to demonstrate diagnostic competencies prior to earning their degrees. And your work on this bill will eliminate barriers to employment that many of our graduates experience by ensuring that the law clearly reflects the clinical responsibilities of LMFTs and LPCs. So I thank you for your continued work, and I would like to know if you have any questions for me.
Any questions? The letters are very impressive. Thank you for bringing those. I'll give people a chance to look them over if any questions arise.
And Chair, I just want to comment and thank you for bringing the rest of the university system into this, too. It does say a lot, and I was in on this the last two efforts for this bill. And I have to say I didn't know she was a constituent, but a woman named Anne from who lives in Thailand. And she does live in my district when she's not in Thailand. So she wrote from Thailand, because I looked at the timestamp and it was the next day, and I thought, how could I get it?
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, if I may. I just want to call the committee's attention. I gave you hard copies if you're not trying to go digital, and I will email to the rest of you, but Becky Eklund, the Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists, was here this morning and dropped off a letter but could not remain.
Okay, thank you. Good, and I understand there will be amendments coming. We will have another hearing at that point after you've met with all of the stakeholders and make sure that's exactly what you want, and hopefully we can have a motion on this bill. So. Okay. Any questions? Any last questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
What I'd like to do is ask people who came here to support this bill, if you would stand up, please. That's great. And if you could just tell us where you're from, that would be wonderful.
Hi, I'm Leonore Schmiller. I'm from Portland, Oregon.
Great.
Angela Ralph from Portland, Oregon.
Great. And I know who you are. You knew?
Maggie Brenstein, Tiger.
Great.
Doug Chapman, North Portland.
Tedra Mandel, Salem.
Gary Woodring from Medford.
Lauren Meltzer, Salem.
Great.
Gary Williams, Salem.
Becky Eklund, Salem.
Great.
Lana Laney, Portland, Oregon.
Marty Laney, your district.
Oh, great.
Jim Drager, I have two offices, one in Gresham, one in Newburg.
Great.
And I'm Elsie Brimler, and I have an office in Corvallis and in Salem.
Nyla Epstein, Portland.
Deanne Fay, Portland.
Shelley Hampson, Tigard.
Liz Sinclair, Portland.
Susan Zoll, Portland.
T.J. Strauss, Portland.
Gina Neckel, Wilsonville.
Portland. Did I miss anybody? Well, thank you all for coming.
They're on the side.
Yes, yes. Great. Thank you all. What's that?
There are more outside.
Oh, there are? Well, why don't you sit down? We'll invite them to come in and tell us who they are and where they're from.
You know, you have to bounce. Is there anybody in opposition?
Yeah, is there anybody in opposition? I would have assumed that they would have testified. Is there anybody who's in opposition to this bill? Invite them to come. What? They don't want to come in?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would like to say that one of my constituents in Hood River is supportive of this bill, but has been through many years trying to work on this and wasn't up for this one.
Yeah, I understand that. I think there are a lot of people who worked very, very hard on this in the last 4 years. So we appreciate all the work that you've done, all of you, and we appreciate you taking the time to come here to advocate for yourselves and for your profession. So we wish you the best of luck, and we're looking forward to seeing the amendments. So is there anybody else who wishes to speak? Okay, seeing none, we'll...
Sure.
Yes.
Maybe I should speak against this bill, because it's just not right to have such...
The chair has a big hammer.
Yeah. You've got to come up here.
Representative Huffman, I would suggest you not do that.
Just a small correction to the record. Last time I was here on a similar bill was when I was pregnant with my daughter, which was in 1993.
Oh, wow.
So,
yes. Well, congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. With that, we will close the hearing on House Bill 2506. Thank you again for coming. You're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting, but I understand if you chose not to. We'll open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2124. Take your conversations outside, please. Thank you. Okay, Vic. Go ahead.
Good morning. Excuse me. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, I'm Vic Todd, Administrator for the Office of Self-Sufficiency Programs within the Children's, Adults, and Families Division of the Department of Human Services. And I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2124. Essentially, House Bill 2124 is a change in the name of the food stamp program to the new name that was part of the Food and Nutrition Act of 2008. And in that act, the name was changed to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. So the Food and Nutrition Services is encouraging states to change their name to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, although states do have the option of naming their program something else. So what we did was to do a survey of partners and advocates and staff to see how they felt that should be approached and what name should be used. And ultimately, 61% of those indicated that the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program name should be used. So that's what is proposed in this bill. We do have some Dash 1 amendments that we would encourage you to adopt, and it's basically just a clarification correction in terms of the use of the term electronic debit card, where actually the term benefit should be used. And that's because we have a demonstration project in four counties where we actually issue the benefits by check to seniors and people with disabilities. And that's been in place since 1980. And so in order to continue that and to be sure that those people are included in this name change, we would want to do that. So we'd encourage you to adopt those. So, thank you. That, I would take any questions.
Any questions? Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. And this is probably a smarty question, but does that mean with the name change that services are better, that we have more benefits for our families in need? Or is it simply a name change?
Chair Tomei, Representative Van Orman, it does not change the amount of benefits. It's just a name change. The stimulus package does have an impact on benefit levels, but it's not associated with this.
Thank you.
Representative Maurer.
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. Two questions. There's no fiscal impact
Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer, that is correct. Because it is optional for the states to change their name, we also have the ability to phase that in. And so there's no fiscal impact. We'll change that name as, you know, as we go forward. So in terms of costs for reforms and things like that, we don't need to you know, immediately make those changes.
Okay.
So it'll be a gradual implementation.
And then, Madam Chair, the follow-up question is, so you have a demonstration project where you issue checks to senior citizens and people with disability. Isn't check the old way and the debit card the new way?
Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer, actually the food stamp program was actually, that's why it was called that, because they were actually coupons that were in essence a separate currency. And in order to encourage participation, you know, in the senior population and with, and people with disabilities, this pilot was begun in 1980, and many states had similar pilots, and that was to encourage people to access the program and to provide that benefit through a check rather than through the food stamp coupon process.
One follow-up?
The debit card is the Oregon Trail card?
Correct.
Yeah, correct. How do we know, I mean, because you hear stories about the abuse of that system, and how do we know that the person using the card is, in fact, the one entitled to use it?
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, Representative Maurer, with the use of the debit card, the amount of fraud has dropped dramatically. It works essentially like any debit card. You have a card issued and you have a PIN number, and there are significant penalties for use of that card fraudulently and for either for the client or the person that is using those cards if they're using it fraudulently.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Representative Denbrough.
I just have an informational question. So is this program now going to be known, that the new name is kind of cumbersome, is it going to be known by its acronym?
Chair Tomei, Representative Denbrough, yes.
So it'll be the SNAP program?
That is correct. That is the acronym that's used, and there has been a lot of conversation about that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just a second. We've got Representative Van Orman.
Yeah, and it's informational for me. The debit card, is that a monthly issue with a monthly allotment, or do they get it for a certain period, a different period of time?
Chair Tomei, Representative Van Orman, it's a monthly benefit amount.
Okay. Representative Cowan?
I'm going to pass.
Okay. All right. All right. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Vic.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this? Okay. So we're going to
open to close the public hearing.
I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2124, and I will open up a work session on House Bill 2124.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendments dated February 9th, 2009.
Representative
Wilson
moves to adopt the -1 amendments dated February 9, 2009. Any discussion? Olson.
Do we have the
-1?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you want to see mine?
Some of us got it. I'm sorry, I emailed all those. And okay. Sorry.
You'll watch.
Okay. All right. Any discussion? Any objection? We accept the amendments to House Bill 2124, Representative.
Well, therefore, Madam Chair, I'd move that House Bill 2135 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2135.
2124.
Thank you.
Yes.
As amended, okay, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection?
Madam Chair,
yes.
Again, it just doesn't seem right to be in full agreement.
Thank you, Debbie.
Madam Chair, though, I would suggest we do not put this on the consent calendar.
Really?
Just to explain the no physical.
Okay.
In the phase in, just so that there's no confusion at all.
All right.
Good.
Okay. First, we could just do no objection.
Yeah.
Any objections to passing this bill onto the floor with the do-pass recommendation? Okay, getting the required majority, thank you, my words aren't coming out very appropriately this morning.
We'll
it does pass, and who has not carried a bill yet in this committee? Representative Boone, you have not. Look, she was trying to turn her head away.
I was trying to.
I know. Would you like to carry this?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Thank you. With that, House Bill 2124 passes, and we'll go to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Now I'll close the public hearing for the work session on 2124, and we'll open up the public hearing on 2144.
Like me to?
Yes, please.
This bill instructs the Department of Education, the Oregon Youth Authority, the Department of Human Services, and the State Commission on Children and Families to take part in developing an integrated system of care to facilitate a planning process for youth at risk of developing emotional, behavioral, or substance use-related needs using their families and community and natural supports to provide a flexible group of services in a customized plan that reflects the youth and families' needs, values, and preferences.
Thank you, Keeley. And could we call up Aaron, Kelly Seal, Bill Buka, and Aaron, is it Eric?
Eric.
Richards. We have a lot of people who want to testify today, and that's wonderful. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erin Kelly Seal, and I'm the Interim Director of the Children, Adults, and Families Division. And it's my honor and privilege to testify today in support of House Bill 2144. I want to be brief because I think there are people in the audience from whom you really need to spend most of your time hearing, but I've had the privilege of working on this effort from two different perspectives, first in the governor's office as his Health and Human Services advisor. He issued an executive order creating a group that ultimately wrote a report which legislators participated in defining the vision of wraparound for Oregon statewide, and all state agencies were involved in creating that vision. And the report also went into some level of detail, or started to get into some of the level of detail that we need to understand better what it requires to implement this initiative. Since that time, we've had many conversations with the legislature about this initiative because we did receive some resource from the legislature during the special February session to continue moving forward on an implementation plan. And this bill actually really represents two things. One, it represents the fulfillment of a recommendation that the steering committee originally put forward that said that we needed to codify the values, principles, policy, and implementation efforts surrounding these improvements to mental health, to our mental health services, behavioral health services for kids. And two, I think it also represents really the next phase of support from the legislative body for the work that we're doing. And I just briefly want to say that now in my role as someone that has responsibility for agency administration, it seems almost fitting that I'm now in a position to move this forward and make it real for the young people that we serve in the Children, Adults, and Families Division. I've been before you already this legislative session, and you know that our division within the Department of Human Services has responsibility particularly for children and their families who get involved in our self-sufficiency, our temporary assistance for needy family programs, the food stamp program that you just heard about, vocational rehabilitation services, but also, I think most critically, some of our most vulnerable kids who end up not being able to be safe in their own homes and come into the child welfare system. And I really believe in this role that we have a very unique opportunity to create new and different kinds of partnerships with our behavioral health partners in the field, with our education partners, and many other state agencies around improving the way that we serve kids. And really the bottom line about this initiative is this. This is really about good government. It's about effective and efficient government. It's about us meeting the needs of children and their families, not driven by their needs, not as driven by how we organize ourselves as agencies or how we deliver our programs. And I think that's really what all of us who work in government need to be working toward. So it's very exciting to sit here and say to you, we've got many efforts going on, particularly for foster youth, to try and improve the services we deliver. This is the culmination of getting the right service at the right time to children and their families. I know from other experience both locally in Oregon as well as in other states that implementation of this effort can and will have results for our young people and their families. It will mean that fewer kids come into foster care in the first place, which I know is a policy that all of you on this committee support. And it will mean that when kids do need foster care, that we can serve them better and that hopefully we can get them into a safe placement that can better meet their needs and continue the care they need so they can go on to become productive citizens as young adults and adults in the state. So I really, I provided some written testimony, and I will really defer to that so you have an opportunity to hear from others in the room about their personal experience with this really incredible change in the way that we serve our kids and families.
Thank you, Aaron.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, committee members. I am Eric Richards. I'm with the Oregon Department of Education's Office of Student Learning and Partnership, and I'm here on behalf of Superintendent Castillo and the department to express our very, very strong support for this legislation. We're really pleased and extremely enthused to be one of the key agencies involved with this, and we're very proud that as we look at these type of initiatives in other states, that the role of education in this initiative here in Oregon is greater than what we've seen in other states, frankly. And the representation of our districts and ESDs and the state in this is something we feel very good about, and in fact recognize how important it's going to be for education to be a critical participant in this process. I participate in the lead agencies meetings for the initiative and personally feel very, very excited when I see the spirit of consensus and commitment that is shared by all of the agencies, the youth, and the family members who are working together on this, who have seen many conversations about wraparound over the years and feel an extreme sense of commitment to make sure this works because of the benefits it will have for children and for families across the state. So we are very committed and excited about this and urge your support of it.
Great, thank you.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. My name is Bill Bushka. I'm the manager of Children's Mental Health Services for the Addictions Mental Health Division within the Department of Human Services. I'm here today to also testify in full support of House Bill 2144 and the Oregon Wraparound Initiative. And I do want to point out early on that the bill does not have an identified fiscal impact for the state agencies for this biennium. House Bill 2144 really puts into place, as Aaron and Eric have described, efforts that we've been working on for many years, and we have been modeling this work after national efforts and research that really do provide better outcomes that we all want for kids and their families. And some of the outcomes in states that were who have achieved those outcomes really talk about important child welfare outcomes, important education outcomes, important juvenile justice outcomes, and important child and family outcomes. And through this work, we can continue to model our system and learn from other experiences to achieve those outcomes for the kids and families in Oregon. We have had four different federally sponsored sites in Oregon that we've been able to learn from in Lane County, Clackamas County, the Mid-Columbia region, and a current one in Multnomah County. So we have local and national experience that we are pulling from. Through the funding that was provided through the 2008 session, we've also been able to contract with the project management team that's really been able to delve into the details, bring in national expertise, and further work with us on the implementation strategies that this bill will further outline and keep us moving forward. one thing, how it is very important for us for the Addictions and Mental Health Division, and specifically Children's Mental Health Services, when we survey families every year, we get responses from well over 2,000 family members and ask them about what other agencies and services do you need to coordinate with. And well over a third of those families respond back to us and say, besides mental health services, they need to coordinate with three other agencies, at least three other agencies. And that means multiple assessments, multiple plans, multiple meetings, sometimes conflicting services, sometimes different missions from agencies. And it's very difficult for them to really work towards better outcomes for themselves and for their kids. It also means for local communities and providers that they are associated with multiple assessments, multiple paperwork, going to lots of different meetings, and from different agency missions and directions. And through this work, we can make all that more efficient and more effective for the kids and families in Oregon. And that is really important to us. You will hear from many kids and families and other people, and really happy that they're here, and they're very important people for you to hear from. So I do want to let you know that we are working on a set of amendments, and you'll be getting those shortly. We have, since the bill was introduced, we've been working closely with different constituent groups, families, and youth, and have a set of amendments that I believe will further clarify the language, and will bring more strength to the bill. So I ask for the committee's full support of the principles outlined in House Bill 2144, which really is a result of close working partnerships between families, youth, and state agency and local agency partners. Again, thank you for allowing me to testify, and I'd be happy to ask and answer any questions.
Thank you so much. This is an issue that has been worked on for years, and I think it's very exciting to have reached this point, and so I'm very pleased that it's been brought before us today and that we have some chance to move it on through the process. I'm amazed that there's no fiscal. Can someone address that?
Madam Chair, I'll start. I think that originally when you know, a year ago when we were first having conversation about this legislation, and at that time I was in the governor's office, we had planned to bring forward two things to this legislative body. One was a policy option package that included additional funding to move this forward faster, both in local communities and at the state level. Since the economy turned last fall, we had to regroup and ask ourselves the question, do we wholly abandon moving forward on the policy change and the policy direction that we hope to see from the legislature on this? And because we knew, we started to begin to understand better last fall, and of course now have a much different understanding that the economy was changing and it was going to be hard, resources were going to be in very, very short supply in terms of new resource. So the clear direction that we had from families, youth, all state agencies fully supporting also was no. We really need the support of the legislature to continue doing this work, and we need to be able to work together in a way that has a common vision that is articulated and that we can be held accountable to. And so what you have in front of you is something that slows down implementation because of the resource issues. But I think it's really important to make note that there are a lot of things that we believe we can do without new resources better as state agencies, and that will move us forward. The bill, the current version of the bill does include us coming back to the legislature with a report on progress for implementation and anticipated future need for resource to continue moving forward. And I think that's how we feel most comfortable, having been able to say this biennium that we don't have a fiscal and we plan to continue working together to move forward implementation, albeit at a slower rate than we had originally hoped to be able to do.
Good. And there will, did I understand, there will be an amendment coming? Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Huffman, Van Orman?
Just a couple of things. I would be concerned in the future to see a fiscal, because it sounds like all the players are already involved, and maybe I don't have a clear understanding, but I would hate to see more bureaucracy created when we've already got all the players at the table. Just to express that concern on the record. My question is, is 2144 basically going to outline, based on the challenge of the client youth, on an individual basis, who would take the lead, since there are different departments involved in the wraparound? Is that part of what 2144 would do, or would there be just part of the direction to have kind of a nucleus of oversight to determine each case, or how is this implemented?
Representative Hoffman, Chair Tomei, the steering committee report that was presented to the governor really does outline local and state implementation strategies, and the strategies outlined in there talk about a state agency purchasing collaborative. So in some way we get together the funding at the state level, and then the local communities are able to identify the local entity at the community level that is the organizing structure. And so in that way, it wouldn't necessarily have to be a new bureaucracy, but that the local agencies and entities agree on what that structure is and who that may be. And our plan is to roll it out in a way that allows local communities to identify what that group is, who that is, and have agreement at the local level of who that is. And we will outline readiness criteria or what needs to be in place in communities to really be able to do this. There are a lot of principles around the child and family team and the wraparound principles that really talk about coordinating the care, of really having a coordinator, one identified person who really is the care coordinator, while managing the responsibilities that child welfare has, that juvenile justice has, that the different agencies have, and the legal responsibilities that we have, but have an organizing person for that child and family.
Follow up. Follow up. Thank you. You're going to hate me today, aren't you?
No.
I would just caution.
Working on it.
I would just caution. I don't want to see an entity that's set up, not a new entity necessarily, but a method of channeling money. Because I've seen this in my local community in the Dalles, where we used to get direct Medicaid payment for services to children, and that money has been funneled through another portion of DHS. 15% is siphoned off again, and that's that much less money that truly goes to the client. And I really strongly oppose that kind of stuff. I mean, often we see that by the time the money goes from here to here to here, 45% oftentimes is siphoned off by various administrative structure, and we're losing that money to the victims, the clients, the children.
So maybe that's an issue. We can take it up at another meeting.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Representative Van Norman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think one of the issues that I'm having is the fact that as a Head Start director, we've been doing this for a very long time in the local field. We have been coordinating with a variety of agencies to make sure that we know the specifics of every child. I think the issue for us has not been that communication and that coordination and making sure that we all understand what's happening to this child and to this family. It's not a matter of improving the access. It's a matter of just access, period. As you saw on the little map that we had before, our access to mental health care or substance abuse care is pretty limited. And so it would be nice to improve the access if we had something to access.
What I'm going to do here, since we have a lot of people who are wanting to testify, we're hearing some opinions, and I'm happy to hear those. But why don't we just have questions, if there are questions of this panel, very quick questions, and then we'll move on so we get some testimony if there's a chance later after all these people have traveled a distance. After they've had a chance to speak, maybe we can have this discussion. Is that
That's
agreed?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you have a question?
I do have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
In Section 1, and this is for anybody who can answer, you define cultural competence. And I'm not sure that cultural competence has been defined in statute anywhere. And this, in fact, it was, and it had to do with the emergency contraception bill where we define cultural competence. But, I mean, to me, the definition here, you can't get much more ethereal I'm not quite sure why you define it this way as opposed to any other way, because it just doesn't seem to make sense. I'm looking at you, Aaron, because you're the...
Representative Tomei, Representative Maurer. What I can tell you is when the work group that was part of the steering committee, work groups came together, we actually had a work group specifically charged around the issues of cultural competency that spent quite a bit of time getting input from various communities about what that meant and what that looked like for children and families. And the issue that I remember coming up that sticks with me and will forever stick with me was the issue that this is something that we need to be paying attention to as it relates to race, ethnicity, and culture, but beyond that, it's something we need to be paying attention to as it relates to how we work with families individually and their individual family culture. And so the conversation with that committee then was taken outside the conversation that was unique to the subcommittee, and then the work was done to embed their work into the group. The groups that were charged with things like financial, looking at our financing, looking at local readiness, other things. So there was quite a bit of time and focus spent, I think, on this definition. I think if you, I'd be happy to have some folks who spent time working on it come, maybe to the next hearing and spend some time in more discussion about it. I don't know the answer to your question about whether it is in other places in statute, and we can also do some research about that. So I apologize. I feel ill-equipped to respond to what you're suggesting, but I think you have two points. One is this any place else in statute? And two, you have some concerns about the definition in of itself. And I think there may be others who are more qualified than I am to reflect on why they landed where they did in the definition.
So why don't we have a prepared response to that at our next hearing?
Did I misunderstand?
My concern is that the definition is no better than the words cultural competence. It's someone looks at it and says, I still don't know what you mean.
Well, the other thing, Madam Chair, I and Representative Maurer, that I think we could and should do is there were a list of principles that were associated in the report with the issue of cultural competency and how. And for me, now as a program administrator, I find those principles very helpful against, you hold a program up against them and you ask yourself particular questions with respect to your program or your service or your service delivery. And I think it would be good information for the committee to have, remembering, again, that some information is going to end up in, the recommendation is for some information to end up in statute and other information to end up in other places. So that might be good background also to have.
Representative Boone, quick question. Is this a question that...
It's just on this same issue.
Can we come back to that at another time? We'll have another hearing and we can discuss that.
I just want to make sure. I think I know, but I was just going to thank you all for what you did, but we're not supposed to do that. So at this point, does this include the services that we've been trying to get for runaway and homeless youth as well? Maybe they're not in the foster parent or the foster children program as such, but will this pick them up too?
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, the idea is that any and all organizations, either at the local level, who may not be affiliated per se with a state agency, but of course those who are, will be at a table if they're involved in a children and family, in a child's life, in a young person's life, and that young person is accessing and benefiting from the system of care that's created and the wraparound approach. So the Commission on Children and Families isn't sitting at this panel here today, but they've been actively involved in, as you know, in many respects, they partner with us in child welfare around the issues of runaway and homeless youth and their access to services, and they are very supportive and engaged with us. Actually, I know now that I think about it that Dr. Samuel Henry, who's the chair of the commission, is sitting behind me somewhere. And so I would just answer yes. I believe that, when we have a child or young person who's accessing and needing services and they're touching many, many systems, many providers, the idea is that everyone's around the table.
Thank you, and we will be discussing this at further meetings, so if we have any other questions, let Aaron or somebody on this panel know of your questions that arise after you're looking at the bill and have a chance to think of it more. Thank you so much for coming and for the work you've done on this. Okay, we have almost 20 people signed up to speak. And so what I'm going to ask is that you try to make your testimony very short so we can make sure everybody has a chance to speak. So we have Larry Sullivan, Adriana Rickard, and Anna Berardi. Am I pronouncing that anywhere close? And just start speaking as soon as you sit down. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Children's Wraparound Initiative. Excuse me. My name is Larry Sullivan. I'm the Director of Special Education in the Eugene School District and a member of the Lane County Mental Health Advisory Committee and Community Health Center boards. Schools have, for the last decade, worked very hard to ensure that students succeed in school and succeed as they graduate and go into post-secondary education and the workplace. We've also worked very hard, but less successfully, in really addressing the barriers, the social, emotional, and learning and mental health barriers to learning in the schools. The Wraparound Initiative, we believe, as another agency, will help us address some of these barriers. The Wraparound Initiative provides for a coordinated, comprehensive system of care that works across an array of services in our communities to serve our families and children. If you think about what it would look like in schools, one of the things that's very important in schools is to be able to coordinate our services with our community services. We have school-based mental health centers. We have school-based counselors. This process will allow us to connect with those agencies to serve our students. We have health centers, which I'm a member of the board. We have two health centers in the Eugene area at our local high schools. It will allow us to connect our health centers, our community health centers, our community mental health centers, and our schools to better serve our students. It would also provide a single plan service coordination, which we've all been looking for some time. And probably most dear to my heart as an educator, we have a number of initiatives within the school settings. I don't know if you've heard of positive behavior supports programs. Their programs that are being initiated throughout the schools in Oregon to intervene early on behavioral and emotional issues in the schools. It would help us connect with the other agencies serving children with this program. And another one that we've worked in Lane County through the Child Center, we have three elementary programs in Eugene, Springfield, and Bethel school districts that place day treatment programs for mental health services for elementary students in our schools. That allows those students to remain in their community and oftentimes in their neighborhood school to receive those services and to participate in the school setting. As an educator and a school psychologist practitioner for the last 30 years, I've watched many of our students tumble through and out of our agencies, whether they be school, mental health, or health agencies. I truly believe, and I think I can speak for my colleagues, that the Wraparound Initiative will build a service net, not a safety net, a service net for these students to catch many of these students who need these services and their families. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
I know we're in a hurry. I just got a quick question.
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you. You talked about how this will allow that wraparound to happen. Without this law, is there current laws that keep it from happening? I mean, I'm having a hard time understanding why it doesn't already happen.
Representative Tomei and Representative Freeman, they're not current laws that prohibit it from happening. But I think in many years we've worked in isolation oftentimes, and there's been barriers to communication and collaboration, and they come and go oftentimes. And this really builds a framework and a will that would allow us to be able better connected and coordinated in our services.
Thanks.
Thank you for the question. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Go ahead.
Chair Tomei, yeah, and representatives of the committee. My name is Adriana Rickard, and I am a family support specialist for the Oregon Family Support Network. And more importantly, I am the mother of two boys, ages 14 and 6. My younger son happened to be born with special needs. And I'm here to ask for your support in passing House Bill 2144. I just wanted to share my experience. I had been attending Portland State University, getting ready to graduate when I became pregnant with my youngest child. After graduation, I was unable to go to work because he was born with severe medical needs as well as behavior disorder and attachment issues. And it had a major effect on my life. It was socially isolating. I lost family members and friends who didn't understand my child's mental illness, as well as entered into extreme poverty as I was unable to work because of his medical conditions and his special needs and the lack of services that were available to me in the community or affordable. And I had previously worked in residential and day treatment settings with Child Protective Services and the Immediate Response Unit and in special education classrooms around the Multnomah County area. And unfortunately, none of this prepared me to be the parent of a child with severe special needs. So I went from a competent professional and through this experience turned into someone that felt hopeless and isolated and did not know where to turn for services. And even after we did engage in the service system, I found it to be fragmented and blaming, and a lot of the services received I probably could have provided to my child myself. So I ended up going to a parent support group, a parenting class, upon the advice of my son's counselor, and found someone that I could be friends with who was going through the same situation that I was, and she asked me to join her Wraparound Oregon early childhood team. And I had asked her what that meant, and she said, well, I get to pick professionals and natural supports that sit on my team and wrap around my family like a big hug, she said. So even though I was very overwhelmed, my child was physically dependent upon me for nutrition. He was not eating until the age of 2.5. He was also receiving services from at least 5 different systems in the community, and we were attending 20 to 30 hours of appointments a week. I agreed to be on our team to support her because I knew how important it was. And from the very first time that I went to the meeting, I thought, gosh, this is what I've been missing. This is what I need. So I asked the facilitator, hey, can I self-refer? And she said, I don't know. I'll get back to you. So I was, after she said yes, I was the first self-referral to Wraparound Oregon Early Childhood Project. And since that point, we started receiving services about 2.5 years ago. My life has completely changed and is back on track. And like I said before, I felt extremely helpless, and that was one of the biggest barriers to my family's success, is that through the fragmented systems and looking for services that did not exist or were not financially available to me, I did lose the belief in myself that I'd had all along, and I doubted myself as a parent, even though I had worked with other children, you know, people's children in crisis. And Wraparound was able to provide me with a facilitator and a family partner, and through these meetings, all members of the systems we were being served by were able to attend and see that some of the treatment plans they had given my family were actually contradictory, and what looked like defiance to one agency because I wasn't following their recommended course of action was actually just the fact that out of 3 separate treatment plans, I had to pick one and go with it or go crazy trying to do all 3, you know, behavior versus, you know, sensory integration disorder. And one therapist had said to me at one point, well, what does it matter? You know, he's getting treatment. And I said, it does. They want me to say my son's neurologically overloaded and this is why he's having behaviors. Another agency wanted to say, no, he's behaviorally challenged and these sensory issues are the manifestation of the behavior problem.
Adriana, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay.
I love hearing your story, and I want to hear more, but we have so many people wanting to speak.
So I was able to access services that had been denied to me previously because my team rallied together and wrote letters of support for me to receive services from things that had been denied, and also to have collaborative efforts through the community partners we were dealing with. And now, long story short, my son transitioned from early Head Start and Head Start to kindergarten and was removed from all his special education services. He no longer qualifies. My older son was able to work on depression issues that came from having a sibling with severe special needs, and I'm back at work. So I was able to go to work with Wraparound Oregon and then the Oregon Family Support Network, and I'm employed. I'm a taxpayer again. And if I hadn't had Wraparound Oregon Early Childhood Project, I think my son would be in residential treatment and my other son would have severe special needs and I would be broke. So thank you
Thank you for
so
coming
much.
To share your story. And good luck. It sounds like it's been a real success. Thank you. John Lynn, Lauren Calkins, Tanya McIntyre. And whoever sits down first gets to talk first. You can do whatever you want.
Oh.
But you've got 2 minutes.
As long as it's within 2 minutes.
That's right. Within minutes.
Whatever you can do in 2 minutes each.
And I'm going to hold you to that. I've got a clock watch right here.
Now
so go
the
ahead,
watch
quickly.
Is on. Good morning. My name is John Lynn. I am a wraparound facilitator for the Oregon School Aged Project in Multnomah County, and I'd like to tell you a brief story about a youth and the wraparound process, how it highlights and how it's changed my practice. When I first met this youth, she was at an inpatient residential treatment program. She just turned 12 years old. Her hair was matted and broken. She was clinging to a blanket and the arm of a line staff that she just met weeks before. An emergency meeting was arranged with over 8 well-intentioned professionals from mental health, child welfare, education, treatment staff, and attorneys. This group was under intense pressure to find a community placement because her time was up at the program. The youth's family was not invited to the meeting. The youth was scared and couldn't sit still long enough for us to finish our introductions. She tried to answer a brief question, but quickly broke into tears and had to leave the room. The youth had significant mental health issues, a history of trauma, hadn't been in regular school since second grade, and was famous for running away from locked facilities. The last time she ran, we were told that she and some peers escaped from an apartment full of strangers in Hillsboro, and one of the peers was allegedly raped. Compounding the pressure to move this was a struggling team with a long history of contentious communication, bitter turf battles over who's responsible for the next placement and service. My job prior to wraparound was to simply inform this group about what placement options were available. Unfortunately, the group was lost, frustrated, bitter, and solely focused on where this youth was going to live next. In my role as a wraparound facilitator, I started to organize the team to focus on the 10 wraparound principles. Despite setbacks and bouts with chaos, we met regularly, sometimes 2-3 times a month. We were very persistent. We invited the family into the process. We learned that they were angry and for legitimate reasons. We also learned that they knew their daughter very well and had many insights to her behavior. We honored the family voice and included them in the process. We focused our energy on the family strengths and identified needs. Keeping positive, especially on a case like this, was critical in moving forward, not backwards. This is strength-based.
You have 1 minute.
Okay. We learned more about each other's strengths. We learned to work together and share responsibility for outcomes. With this cooperation, we were able to produce a remarkable variety of possibilities that include natural supports that met the child's needs. We were team-based, had cooperation, and used natural supports. So So the wraparound process has dramatically changed how I do work on cases like this one. The wraparound process is guided by nationally accepted principles, offers a fresh approach to the next evolution in social services, and should be a statewide endeavor, in my opinion. And on a slight personal note, someone asked me when the last time I was here at this kind of committee. It was about 30 years ago. It was with my mother, who had a foster home. We raised over 300 foster kids. And what she would do is bring all of us around the desk to present.
John!
Carol? My mother is Roberta Berlin. And
I was their caseworker.
Yes, you were.
I want to say you can have all the trends. You just put me out.
What a great story.
Oh,
can you believe it? Here I
no.
am. And this is the next evolution in the work that my mom did for all
of us. Oh, of course. His mother was a saint. I loved his mother. She was fantastic. It was a great home. Did great work. John, I'm so pleased that you're here, that you're doing what you're doing.
I didn't get your name until about 5 minutes before I walked up here. And
oh,
so.
Oh, my God.
Madam Chair, we need to move on.
You want to take a break? You have to talk
outside. Well, that will be at 10 o'clock. John, thank you so much for being here, for doing this work. Yeah. Well done.
Thank you.
That is great. Well, speaking of wraparound, tell all of your siblings hello. They come from a big family and had a huge house that was always filled with love and lots of food.
And chaos.
And chaos. I loved it. I loved it. Yes.
He's the apple who didn't fall that far.
Oh, yeah.
I tried to escape desperately.
But no way.
Here
not with a mom like that.
Oh, well, it is wonderful to see you and hear from you. We do need to move on, but you'll stay around afterwards. Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming. Go ahead.
Chair Tomei and members of the committee, and hearing that you are John's caseworker, I would really like to talk with you today.
I was the caseworker for the home, not
That's right.
John.
That's right. Thanks for that reframe. My name is Lauren Calkins, and it's been my privilege for the last few years to be the team leader, clinical supervisor of the Wraparound Oregon School Age Project in Multnomah County, where we've engaged over 60 families into the wraparound process. And we really drew upon the strengths of Multnomah County, what is already existent that is the strengths that exist for families. The public agencies entered into an agreement to donate staff to become the Wraparound Oregon facilitators, to facilitate teams and to bring the agencies together so that we could have this concentrated effort looking at solutions for families with complex mental health, behavioral needs, school issues, things like that. I think one of the greatest successes we've had on our teams is when we've been able to keep all of the agencies and the resources together to do this collaboration, not just communication, but collaboration to labor together with the families and their natural supports to bring about the solutions that they're looking for. I think if you looked at our teams, one of the greatest barriers that we've had is when that does not occur, when one agency seems to be on the hook for the child and the others aren't necessarily brought to bear. So I'm in support of this bill because it really promotes that type of collaboration to come together so that families can bring their strengths to the table, make those bigger, and also use the concentrated strengths of their communities so that they can strengthen their family and make their situation better, as you have heard and as you will hear today. So I'm here in support of that. I just gave you a fact sheet and a couple of the things of note. It highlights a couple of the wraparound initiatives around our state, just a couple of them. And on some of the boxes, the outcomes for the highest risk youth from Wraparound Oregon, Multnomah County, one of the things that we like to see is that folks are actually sensing stronger hope, more strength in their own assets and ability to bring to their own solutions, and that's represented in that box in the upper left-hand corner. Also in the lower right-hand corner is the shows the placement numbers at wraparound initiation and also at 1 year later. And you can see a reduction in moves, a very significant reduction in move for those youth, which really promotes stability and the ability to hook into their community, their family, and situate those roots. There's also a family story that I will not, you can read the story, a short success story that's highlighted there. I met this youth and saw the wraparound process through. She is working today, and her desire is to be a probation officer. And so it's a very, very much a change because of this type of collaborative effort. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Lauren. And I hope that maybe one of you or somebody here can get back to some of the members workers, well, all of us, I guess, to make sure that this is not just setting up another layer of government that, as Representative Huffman suggested, may be happening, that another layer of government is going to take the money out, skim it off the top, and then so there's less services for children, which is what we're all here for. So thanks so much, and I'll see you afterwards. Great. And Tanya McIntyre, is she here? Okay. Tanya, Brianna Schenck, and Margaret Puckett? Puckett. And the first one sitting down gets to talk first.
Oh, I have to do this too.
And as I said before, we're going to try to hold you to 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Brianna. I wanted to read you something. I'm really happy Wraparound has been in my family. If it wasn't for Margaret, I would never have a chance to live with my mom. Since my family has been involved with Wraparound, my mom has spent more individual time with me, helping me understand my disabilities and how to deal with them. With going to a couple of my mom's parenting classes, I understand I am not alone. There's kids just like me going through the same things. I have learned it is not my fault nor anyone else's. We are all different in some kind of way. Some people need more help than others, and Wraparound is always there to lend a hand, a helping hand.
Good job, Brianna. Thank you.
Good, then all by yourself.
Yeah, right.
Okay. My name's Tanya. I'm Brianna's mom. I've had several problems with her. She's been in and out of foster homes. With that said, I'm going to jump into what I wrote. It says, I am grateful to have a wonderful team at Wraparound. They have helped my family in many ways. While working with Wraparound, I quickly learned that there are other families like mine. I am not alone in my battles. Wraparound works with me and my family. What may work for one child with difficulties doesn't always work for another child. I have two children that have been involved with Wraparound. I have learned new ways of talking, coping, as well as managing children with mental and emotional disabilities. I have learned to be proactive and not reactive. Wraparound doesn't push anything. They're very open-minded, friendly, and easygoing people. They don't stand above you and point fingers. They stand beside you. You and your family make your own decisions. After all, who knows your family better than you? Most places work directly with parents on behalf of the children. Wraparound actually let my children be a part of the plan. They gave my kids a voice. Since working with Wraparound, I have noticed a major change in my children's outlook on their future, and they now know that their ideas and feelings are very important. Wraparound has turned my life around 100%. Without their guidance and understanding in our lives, where would we be? I now recognize a potential situation arising with my kids and can take action to avoid blowouts. Wraparound has taught me a different way of thinking. I used to drown myself in negativity and had no hope. And then along came Wraparound. My family now can work together and able to cope and move forward. Wraparound is the light at the end of my tunnel. Remember, our children are our future, and with Wraparound, our children have a better future.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming and bringing Brianna.
Thanks.
Honorable representatives and Chair Tomei of the committee, I'm here in support of House Bill 2144. My name is Margaret Puckett, and I come here wearing several hats. First, as a parent that really could have used Wraparound years ago while raising a very troubled teenage daughter. Next, as the facilitator of family support groups for 11 years. And I counted all the counties of the parents that I worked with, and there are 11 in Oregon and one in Washington, Clark County. I come as the author of a book on the subject, Raising Troubled Kids, from all the things I learned from all the families over the years. And I'm also the family partner for Wraparound Oregon in Portland, and I work with John and Lauren. And my goal is different. My goal is specifically to support the family like Tanya and Brianna. And in Multnomah County, because we have limited capacity, we get the most complex and challenging cases. And As I said, I wish my family had had something as wonderful as this model and philosophy to help us avoid the trauma of a broken mental health system, and you've heard some description of that. RAP works because it honors and respects family and youth better than all other approaches. It affirms the strengths and skills of each family member instead of focusing on their problems. It enables families and youth to solve problems themselves and to customize treatment so it becomes something they can live with sustainably. In my position, I've seen remarkable turnarounds in youth and families because they listened to them and treated them as the experts of their situation. This developed hope and trust quickly and allowed families to rise to the occasion on behalf of their troubled child or teen. I've seen families begin to resolve their problems themselves instead of trying to follow the directions of professionals. It's almost too easy with this approach. It's practical, common sense with a big dose of hope. The guiding themes for our families are so simple and elegant. One wonders why providers haven't used them before. Not about me without me. Nothing is discussed or planned without the family and youth directly involved. Next is at home, in school, and out of trouble. Period. That's what we need to work for. If the family keeps their compass pointed in this direction, solutions come forth from unexpected places. The wraparound model is solid, practical, fair, and compassionate, and it's been tested here in Oregon. Please support House Bill 2144 for the benefit of families in counties across the state. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Any quick questions? All right. Thank you so much. Good luck. So we will call up Allison Kelly and Samuel Henry and Zach Anderson. Zach Anderson Clem, I think.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I like this testimony format.
So
it's very...
This is very nice. For future people who are coming to testify, one page? Very nice. Okay. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Love your hat, by the way.
Huh?
Love your hat.
Huh?
I love your hat.
Oh, thanks. Good morning, Chair Tomei and the other members of the committee. My name is Zach Anderson Clem, and I am 13 years old. I'm going to talk about treatment places and being in the community today, and House Bill 2144 is important. When I was 7, I went to treatment. I had 18 different placements until April 26, 2006. My mom says the state had to pay almost $4,000 for me to be there at all the treatment places, and that doesn't count what our shirts and she had to pay. I wish I had that money to do whatever I want with it and build a treatment place for kids to hang out like me. I've had to go to the hospitals and do hospital day treatment for a little since then. But mostly I've been home. I like being home a lot better because my family cares about more than staff does. More than staff does about me. School is a lot better too. I used to go to school for 2 hours a day. Now I go for all day except for first period. And I have my favorite classes, choir, math, and science. And mainstream, not in the EGC. Also, there's no level system at home or school. Level systems don't work for me to go to, even though they put me on it. What's been good about being home is playing sports, games, and doing stuff with other people. I have an adult mentor from DD Service who plays golf, tennis, magic, and Wii with me. Arthur is his name, and he's fun to be with even though he can be a little pain in the butt like my mom. What's been hard being home is having to go to... go to daycare after school for those little kid daycares when I'm 12, because mom didn't have anywhere else to go because she had to work. All the other kids were a lot younger, and I have tried to go into the Boys and Girls Club, but the kids always pick on me there, and no staff listens or does anything about it. I feel safe. I don't feel safe anywhere, pretty much, except for home. Most of the people I get along with are adults, no friends that are my age. So the mentors, I don't consider them friends because they're mentors or people to look up to. I know people like me, but they're 20 or 22 years old, and even though we have fun, I can talk to them. And all they can't count. Oh, I can't read today.
You're doing fine.
I can't count as friends because they're too old and adults, because they're like Pete, just not my age. So I wish that there were activities where my mom and other adults don't have to watch me. I wish I could make and keep friends my own age. I don't like summer camps. A lot of the kids get picked on. I'm definitely one of them. I never want to go to one again unless they have highly trained staff who know how to handle and stop bullies. I also think that staff should be nice and know what they're doing. They need to be flexible and not super strict so kids like me can have fun. I doubt that this will happen before I'm an adult. My mom and grandma have been trying to get help so it's easier for me to stay at home. We had no help for a long time, but since I got the DD service, because of my autism stuff, it's better. But there's supposed to be more people coming in to do more stuff with me, and it's taking a very, very long time because of the paperwork and things. My grandma and mom are stressed almost as bad as me and not as good as being patient with me. I really want to stay home and at my school. I think I will be able to if we get extra help like what's available with the wraparound approach. We don't get that now, and I worry about going to treatment again or foster care or juvie. Please pass this bill so kids like me can have safe places to go, things to do, live at home, and so our parents can help with safety stuff and learn things from each other about how to do a better job. Thank you.
Excellent job, Zach. Thank you. There was one correction. Your mother sent me a note, and she said the state spent approximately $400,000.
That's what I meant.
That's what you wrote. I just wanted to make sure that people picked up on that. Thank you so much for coming, and thanks for all the good work you're doing.
Great job.
All right.
Good morning, Chair Tomei and members of the committee.
Could you speak a little louder, please?
Oh, the big lecture classes. My name is Samuel Henry. I am a chair of the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. I'm also a professor at Portland State University and the father of a teenager. I'd like to testify very briefly on behalf of HB 2144. And I come to you, I wanted to use a metaphor that was appropriate, as both a member of a choir and a member of a course. And the course is probably the Greek course kind of version, where you have heard from Aaron Kelly Seal and some of my other colleagues from the Department of Education. As a part of that, a state agency, we want to lend our support and request the support for HB 2144. As a member of the choir, though, I represent 36 local counties who each have their own Commission on Children and Families, and that's where the impetus from this came, because you charged us, the Commission on Children and Families, with being advocates and to educate and inform you about the issues. And this is a critical policy issue that has risen up from almost every single commission, local commission throughout the state. You will know probably that the State Commission has adopted 5 leadership priorities. Those are on the pass-around sheet that you're getting. And our focus is on improving comprehensive health of children, particularly the mental health of children. I want to stress that these have been derived as part of our community-based local comprehensive planning process. And over the 8 years, as I said before, almost each of the local commissions has pointed to a gap and a need for children's mental health as a top priority. You no doubt will have many, many sets of data, but I just want to call your attention to the fact that children's mental health disorders are widespread in Oregon, that 12.83% of the children 17 and under in Oregon experience moderate to severe mental health disorders, that there are approximately, with 900,000 children in Oregon, about 107,000 have experienced moderate mental illness, and about 7,000 are afflicted with more severe mental health disorders. There is a fraction of children receiving the services that they need. About 1 in 3, we've estimated, receive the public mental health services. About 37,000 children younger than 17 were served in the system in the fiscal year 05-06. What this means, obviously, is that we are strongly supporting legislation that is before you, that we are strongly supporting it because we know that wraparound breaks down boundaries, and that is the purpose of this legislation, and I can't underscore that enough. Local county commissions are a unique subset, and they are an asset that will work directly with the other agencies that you've heard from. Our own unit is engaging with the Casey Project and local communities to reduce the number of children entering foster care. That will all be integrated as a part of the wraparound.
Speaking of wraparound, could you round it up?
Yes, ma'am. Chair Tomei. What essentially I want to say is that you have heard from other of our colleagues, and I thank you very much for your support.
Thank you, Samuel. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Tomei and members of the committee. My name is Allison Kelly. I'm the director of the Marion County Commission on Children and Families. We have 81,750 children in Marion County. 20%, over 20% of them live in poverty. 51% of our school-aged children are eligible for free or reduced lunch. We have about 822 of those children in foster care at this time, a little lower than a couple years ago, but all of those 822 children have experienced multiple traumas. And what we're seeing right now on the ground is a surge in domestic violence and a surge in child abuse, a surge in children witnessing violent activities in the home. That's creating a surge in mental health needs. That's just to lay the foundation that the need will continue and the need will likely escalate. 3 quick points. Before I went to law school, I was a medical case manager for Salem Hospital Rehab in the context of an multidisciplinary rehab team, so I'm familiar with that model. It's a model that works. Wraparound is a multidisciplinary model, and it works. When I became director last May, I was invited to attend a case staffing of an interdisciplinary team here in Marion County called New Solutions that is a sort of a small model of the wraparound model. It's an amazing opportunity to hear those staffings because you see the connectivity, and that's the one word that I would put around wraparound is the connectivity. Staggering to me that of all the cases that were discussed that day, all of them had a relationship to kids who run away or are homeless. We have about 3 to 4,000 runaway homeless kids in Marion County at any given time. Nearly all of them also have mental health issues, so that's an issue. Attended a CLE, continuing legal education, a couple weeks ago on juvenile mental health. Superior Court judge from California raving about wraparound. Wraparound works. Right now I sit as a member of the local public safety coordinating council, and we're having town hall meetings all over the county. We were just up in Silverton last night. Very well attended meeting. One of the number one public safety issues in our county right now is mental health. They're seeing a surge of people who are just unstable, and the schools are seeing that as well. The kids who are exposed to some of the toxic things that their parents are dealing with. So testifying today in support of the bill has the right elements in it. In Marion County, we have a group of people who have been meeting and are very aware of this and are very interested in it. And I'm, again, here just to say that we believe it's the right model, and thank you for the opportunity to be here with you this morning.
Thank you all for coming. Thank you, especially Zach. You know, I've got several other people, and if there are any children or young people who have written up that they want to speak, I want to take them first so we'll make sure that they're heard. Okay, come on up. Come on up. Yes. You put your hand up.
I'm high-fiving him.
Oh. Did any young people testify, or do they want to come and testify today? Oh, good. Anybody else? All right, then we also, and tell me your name, dear.
My name is Dominique Buckley.
Dominique. Okay, then we'll also, oh, you were next in line.
Oh, okay.
Debbie Jetton and Kristen Anderson. And then on board we'll have Martin Taylor, Cheryl Hatchell, and Jamie Farish. Okay, go ahead.
My name is Dominique Buckley, and I am a youth advocate for BCN, EOC, CAMIC, and CAT.
You've got to tell us what all that means.
Okay, BCN, Behavioral Children's Network, EOC, which is formerly known as CSCI, Children's Mental Health Executive Oversight Committee, CAMIC, Consumer Affairs Management Committee, and CAT, Consumer Advocates Team. I belong in all these so I can have a voice for people like me and other people. I have trichotillomania, which also known as TTM, and I unknowingly and uncontrollably, and I can't feel it, pull out my hair. And I cut my hair off so it looks more normal instead of having long hair with blotches all over. I have two younger brothers. One is 13 and he is autistic. And the other is 11 and he has bipolar. And I would like a kind of a community youth and family member support team kind of, and have it in like age groups so kids could have more support on kids their own age and they can talk about their experiences. And at the same time, in another room or close by, the parents can talk about their experiences and how they can also help. And I am very, very supportive of this House Bill 2144, and I would love it if you guys would support it.
Thank you. Thank you. Great testimony. We're glad to hear from you.
Madam Chair, to me and committee members, my name is Debbie Jeton. I thank you for this opportunity to share my family's story with you this morning. Wraparound is a way to coordinate care and services for youths dealing with mental illness. Knowledgeable people from a variety of disciplines are called upon, and this service provides a way for all hands to know what the others are doing. Wraparound Services has been a lifesaver for our family. We nearly lost our 17-year-old son by suicide and discovered that he has bipolar disorder. Wraparound Services stepped in to help us prepare for him returning home from a residential treatment program. We were frightened to bring him home. We didn't know what to do to make our home safe, how to react to any episodes, who to call if we needed help, what we would do about school and activities, and how we could wisely help him manage his bipolar diagnosis. We were afraid we would say or do something that would cause him to explode and attempt suicide again. We were very overwhelmed. Our wraparound coordinator met with us before Aaron came home, met with him, and helped put together a safety plan that we all bought into. She helped us discover resources in our own community to call on for assistance. Wraparound gave us hope. We were helped to see beyond the issues right in front of us, to realize that the road to healing is a journey, one that we can influence, and not just a series of things happening to us that we can't control. Our moderator is compassionate, non-judging, and knowledgeable. Our team consists of family members, Aaron's teacher, youth leader, a school administrator, trusted family friend, and medical professionals. All have been able to express care and concern for Aaron and to help forge practical and effective solutions for him. Each meeting begins with a list of successes, reminding us how far our son has come and all the little steps that have added up to bigger things. This motivates us and gives us a track record of successes as we discuss challenges still to come. We then review past concerns and what still needs to be done. It's a place to talk about issues. We brainstorm ideas for dealing with new concerns, and we also decide if we need more input from certain team members or outside resources. We have learned of many programs and resources in our community that we were not aware of. Wraparound pools the knowledge and resources of many people and helps guide families through the process of helping their youth dealing with mental illness. adjusting to the mental illnesses of family and walking the road towards a logical goal together. With a clear goal in front of us, it's clear when Wraparound will complete its task and it'll be successfully with our family. I hope I've convinced you of the value of this program at a very vital time in the lives of our youth. With this program, youth with mental illnesses can be guided to be successful and positively involved in our communities.
Thank you for coming to give us your testimony today, and best of luck with your family.
Chair Tomei and other members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Kristen Anderson, and I am the parent of a child with some challenges who actually does really remarkable things sometimes. That's my son. I'm really proud of he shared today. And I also work for Oregon Family Support Network, so I didn't really want to add a lot right now. I turned into the record probably at least 5 or 6 pages of testimony from people who couldn't be here today who wanted to be here, so you have their stories. And one thing I do want to add that I'm hoping doesn't get overlooked as you're looking at this bill and you're hearing the stories, the wraparound approach and the national model, those are for those really high-end challenging kids that wrapping around the team. And this bill actually goes beyond that. It's not just for those higher-end kids. If you read through it and the clarifications and the amendments that Bill Bushka mentioned earlier, I think it'll be clear that this is really to help break down those barriers so our agencies can work together, make it easier to partner with communities and not just governmental agencies to actually do a better job of prevention and especially early intervention so that families get the support they need sooner so that they don't end up rising to the level of needing that full wraparound team. Right now, the way the system is, many of us are often told it's, well, that's not bad enough, we can't help you yet. That's not bad enough. It's like, how bad does it have to get? And a big piece of this legislation would be to help make it easier for people to get support and help sooner. So thank you, for your time.
Thank you for coming today, and good luck with your family. Okay, so we have 3 more. Thank you all for coming.
Okay. We have 4 more.
Oh, 4 more. So, who else did I say? Cheryl Hatchell,
Taylor.
Martin Taylor, and Jamie Farish, and Bob Lieberman. If Bob can pull up a chair. So, hi. It's good to see you. Just start talking. Just tell us your name and tell us your story.
Thank you, Chairman Tomei and members of the board. I'm a grandparent of a special needs child and in favor, of course, of the bill 2144. My story is this. I was an administrator, had raised my family. My daughter was terminally ill and had a special needs son. We didn't know where to go, what to do. We just had this kid.
I'm sorry, I've been reminded. Did you give us your name?
Cheryl Hatchell.
Okay.
It was
Cheryl,
just hard to hear.
Interrupt.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
It wound up, we were so confused and so stressed that I wound up in the hospital. It took that much to be able to access the wraparound service. Once we were in it, it was totally and completely different. Our grandson goes to school. We're one of the lucky ones. He does not have what we call a paper trail. We've been able to keep him at home because of the family services. We've accessed different natural sources. So we haven't been a drain on the different agencies that would cost thousands, maybe even millions, for his care. He's got multiple diagnoses. We also have been able to volunteer for OFSN.
OFSN is
Oregon Family Support Network.
Thank you.
So that we're helping other people that are in the same place we were a few years ago, and now are working toward trying to open a respite facility for families and for the kids.
Good.
And that's my story.
How old is your grandson?
He's 13 and about 8.
Oh,
he's chronologically 13, but he's about 8.
I see. Okay. Thank you for taking the time to tell us your story, and good luck with your family.
Hello, my name is Jamie Farish, Chair Tomei and Committee. I'm the Executive Director for Oregon Family Support Network, so I'm here bringing forth the voice of thousands of families across our entire state who have children suffering from emotional and behavioral challenges. And I'm here to tell you to support the House bill. And there are many reasons why, and I think you've heard quite a few of them so far, but what you need to know is the children's mental health system is still very fragmented. Despite many successes we've had with the Children's System Change Initiative, which we've had successes, it is still extremely fragmented. Both in my work previously and work now, I oftentimes am sitting in meetings with families, and when our children refuse to be put into a silo with just one issue or one disability, we're sitting in meetings with developmental disabilities saying, well, that's related to the mental health disorder, and the mental health saying, well, no, that's related to developmental disability, and child welfare saying, well, that's mental health. We're not a mental health provider, and we don't want to get involved either. So there's a lot of this. And in the past history, we don't have people coming together in a community to say, this isn't your kid, or this is my kid. This is our kid. This is our child from our community. And we are going to get rid of the layers of bureaucracy. I actually see this as getting rid of a layer of bureaucracy. Because it says, quit treating our kids out of funding silos. Our kids do not fit neatly into silos of funding. And we know our systems of care are very fragmented. And we must come together to enable and ensure that our kids and our families are able to both have dignity, but also to be raised at home, in school, out of trouble, and with friends. Children do not belong in institutions. And if you look at the Developmental Disabilities Unit, the movement that they've had, you'll see. And we really need, I think, to take some advice from their movement and continue moving forward together to collaboratively plan for our families and to keep kids at home and in school, out of trouble and with friends. I know some of you have heard this for quite a few years now, but that is what wraparound does. And wraparound does work. It's a process. It's not a funding stream with gobs of money in it. It's a way of working. And there is no better time than now. We can't afford not to. So I just encourage you to support this House bill.
Thank you so much, Jamie. And I think you put it sort of in a nutshell, what wraparound is all around. And if you could give us a one page, just bullet points we showed you before, how important one page communication is to us. If you could put in a one page how you see wraparound serving children and the fact that you talk about silos, that certainly has been the experience of a lot of us. Mm-hmm. Tell us how that doesn't happen and how wraparound will better serve our children and families. That would be great. From your point of view.
You can count on it. We will put that together and send that in for you.
Thank you. Martin, welcome.
Thanks, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. I'm aware that you're here late, so thank you for giving this group so much time. I'll be very brief. Care Oregon has been part of the wraparound discussion, and we believe that even though we're not a state agency, the bill includes us as being part of a local solution, and we think that's important. We appreciate that. We represent a little over 100,000 people who have something in common, which is they qualify for Medicaid, so we know their income is low. 2/3 of our members are kids. So many of the people that you've heard from are going to be members of a Medicaid program like Care Oregon. We feel like they're our members, that we can deliver better services to them if we have a less fragmented system and we're coordinating across state agencies. I don't think you should dwell on the things that could look like additional administration. I think you should look at all of the successes out there and say, we know we can do this because we are doing it in some places, and we have models, and we can follow those models and the successes. And where it works, you take the fragmentation out, you treat a person as a whole person, you treat a family as a whole family, and you let them have more control over how they get served. And ultimately, successful members are those that feel like they have more control over how they're getting served. Thank you.
Martin, thank you for coming to testify. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Good idea.
Sure.
One question.
Okay, wait.
I would just like to ask them if they could give me the rationale of why we need the law to stop this.
I think probably this would not be the group to ask that of, and we can ask that of of Erin Kelly Seal and somebody
okay.
from the agency.
All right. Okay, okay, thank you.
I could have an opinion on it.
But if you want to answer it, please do.
And Chris Crank.
And Bob Lieberman is looking at this gentleman here. Yeah.
Go ahead, Bob.
Chris. Chair Tomei, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Lieberman. I've worn a number of hats in the children's system in Oregon over many years, including 10 years on the Commissioner of Children and Families. Currently, I'm executive director and have been for a long time of Southern Oregon Adolescent Study and Treatment Center in Grants Pass, which is a multi-service children's mental health agency, and I'm co-chair of the Children's System Advisory Committee for the state of Oregon. I was in the very, very, very beginning of what has become House Bill 2144, which I'm here to support today, in a meeting with Mickey Lansing of the State Commission and Erin Kelly Seal when she worked for the Governor's Office. And the idea behind it, the fundamental underlying idea behind the bill, is to enable us to remove the categorical restrictions that tie the hands of state workers and county workers and other workers in local communities when they're trying to plan for a child. And it really does address Representative Van Orman's question. Oftentimes, this happens because people in child welfare offices and juvenile justice offices and educational arenas and mental health offices say they have no choice but to spend money in certain ways. And so since they only have a limited amount of money, then they say, okay, I can only spend it here, and we end up really kind of at odds about how to serve a child and family that really needs some help. So the idea behind it, the underlying idea, is if we can blend resources at the local level, then we can get much more efficient with use of existing government resources, and it's not really about new resources. So there is a lot of coordination and collaboration happens at the local level, but far too often we're facing this headbutting that really nobody wants to see happen, but it's happening because the strings on the funding streams are tying our hands. And really, it's no one's fault. It's the system. So WRAP-AROND is a process that can enable the collaboration once we get the mechanisms in place for people to be able to coordinate and collaborate more closely and have less categorical restrictions on their decision-making at the local level. So Section 4 of the bill, as you currently have it, talks about, it gives statutory authority to the state agencies to develop the mechanisms which will enable some of this blending and or braiding of dollars at the local level, some of this closer collaboration. And to me, that is the underlying reason that we're bringing this forward. It's being brought forward asking for it to be a law as opposed to an executive order, as opposed to a good idea. It will require future resources in response to what was raised, I believe, by Representative Huffman or somebody earlier. There will be costs, and as Erin Kelly Seal said, that's not being contemplated now because of the budget crisis. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, you heard Chair Henry of the State Commission, as well as Jamie Farish right now of Oregon Family Support Network, talking about the crisis in the children's mental health system, and I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention that there really is a crisis. There's a cost study that was independently done that shows how seriously underfunded it is today, and I would urge this committee as well as the legislature as a whole to be looking at, and I know this is a bad time to be talking about money, but to be looking at how seriously underfunded the children's mental health system is as it moves forward. If we can repair that infrastructure and bring that money to the infrastructure, the future costs that this initiative, when passed or if passed, will bring will be in a place to sustain those costs, and we'll be in a place to really roll this out. Cracked infrastructure is not a good foundation to build a great thing like WRAP-AROND on. So my urging is to move 2144 forward, as well as to pay attention to how the serious trouble that we have in the funding equation for the children's mental health system.
Thank you very much.
Chair Tomei, and members of the committee who are remaining, thank you for being here.
Sorry, people had other
I understand that. I'm just pleased to be able to be here. Good. My name is Chris Crank. I'm the president and CEO of Albertina Kerr Centers in Portland. We have services up and down the Willamette Valley. And we're 102 years old, so we've been at this work for a long time. I want to talk in support of the House bill today, which, because of much evidence gathered over the last 25 years, this is not rocket science. This has been around for quite a while, and actually Oregon's a rather late adopter of this technology, which really works to deal with kids who have multiple involvements. You've heard it over and over again. Is there waste in government? Absolutely.
If a child has to go have multiple assessments, has multiple caseworkers, multiple expectations, none of us would look very good under those circumstances. In 2004, Albertina Care Centers, acting on behalf of a number of local partners from the private and the public sector, took the initiative to submit and received a grant from the Northwest Health Foundation to develop an Oregon wraparound service initiative. With the Northwest Health Foundation support, we were subsequently able to secure major funding from Robert Wood Johnson and the Meyer Memorial Trust to implement Wraparound Oregon, which you, the school age project, which you heard earlier testimony on. And this focused on Multnomah County only, but our agenda at the time when we did that was to support a statewide initiative, as is before you today. Clearly, over the last 5 years, this project and many other projects around the nation demonstrate much success, better outcomes, less cost. The wraparound approach is more successful than a number of current approaches to serving children for several common sense reasons. Children and families work to develop and implement a unified case plan with a common set of expectations and goals. Children and families are supported by a team of professionals working in the community and family environment, as opposed to artificial environments like residential treatment, to help them make decisions with cultural sensitivity and a focus on permanency. Precious taxpayer dollars are used more effectively and efficiently to improve coordination. And finally, I think the question about why couldn't this happen without legislation is a really good one. Having worked was raised in Oregon and worked on these issues for many years, I think that we have a lot of good people, but apparently it cannot be done without you folks telling them to do that. So I hope you do.
Well, thank you for answering. And if we could have a one-pager from DHS explaining why that's important, that would be great.
So thank you for allowing me to testify, and I really would like you to support this.
Thank you so much for coming. Thank you both. Who's this from?
Me.
Oh, and is this something?
Not for this.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much for coming. And I saw a couple of people coming in. Did you want to testify?
She says no.
She says no. Okay. Is there anybody here who hasn't had a chance to testify? Going once, going twice? Relieved. Come up quickly, dear.
Well, we now need to, we've lost our quorum, so we need to actually close the public hearing and open a subcommittee.
So open close the public hearing on House Bill, what are we hearing? 2144. And open a subcommittee on House Bill 2144. Sit down, sweetie, and tell us your name.
My name is Christine Red Thunder, and I am a mother of two kids with special needs behavior problems. And I'm not lucky enough to have wraparound. But, and my 19-year-old son slit his throat in front of me and tried to slit mine. And I've got a 9 and 10-year-old that got taken out of bed by police to watch their brother choke on his blood. I have a friend that has wraparound. I've seen, she has early childhood, because her 5-year-old has developmental disabilities. But she was a victim of domestic violence and has a 12 and 11-year-old that were completely out of control. When she started the wraparound process, I'm on her team. It was always about finding treatment centers. Well, the waiting lists were too long, and they didn't get in. Both of those kids, because the whole wraparound service just worked really hard with them, they're able to stay home now. There's no fighting. She doesn't have to get in the middle of fights between the two boys and get hit. And it's just an amazing process. I think it's awesome that it takes care of the whole family, not just the child that's eligible. In the wraparound program, they have peer-delivered services, which is awesome because there's nothing like talking to somebody that knows because you're so alone. And it's just, I can't tell you how awesome it is.
That's Thanks. Great. It's wonderful that you came to testify on behalf of your friend.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And good luck with your family.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming to testify. I will close the
Subcommittee
on House Bill 2144. Thank you so much for staying. I really appreciate it. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate you coming all the way to Salem, for many of you. And I close the House Committee on Human Services. And John.